you can tap, maybe you will get lucky and get to an encryption endpoint. So access providers, dial-up cable, ADSL, satellite, wireless, internet cafes, which is another interesting one. In the Netherlands, there are plenty of internet cafes, or actually all internet cafes. You don't need to show any type of ID. So how are they going to receive a tap? We'll see it later in the electronic warrant that there's no way how these people can get a tap. Anyway, libraries, public access points, web hosters, co-location facilities. That's a nice one as well. There are a lot of web hosting companies in the Netherlands that have like a single PC somewhere in a rack at a very big location in Amsterdam. They pay about 250 guilders a month. They have four clients hosting four company websites. And they suddenly need to register with the government for 6,000 guilders a year. They need to have this tapping box for a couple of hundred thousand a year. Obviously, they cannot afford this. And the internet exchanges were quite surprised as well. Like, excuse me, do you know what rate we're sending packets? Do you really want to tap that? Again, that's very difficult because it's all single devices. It's Cisco's talking to each other. Where are you going to put the tap? It's very difficult. The non-public telecommunication services. Officially, schools are a closed circle. Not everybody can go to school and get internet access through school. So it's officially not a public service. So which means it's exempt from Article 13. I think we have like, 50,000, 100,000 students in the Netherlands. All universities offer dial-up internet access. Sometimes even up to megabits into your dorm or your room. Obviously, they want to tap these people, but officially, according to the law, they're not allowed to. The same for closed foundations or clubs. CCC, if they would, it would ask for some sort of admittance or annual registration. They would be considered a private closed club, and so they wouldn't need to be tappable. Which is also probably something they will work around very soon. Government bodies, well, that's an easy one. You just tell yourself what to do. So that's not a big one. Private companies is going to be a difficult one as well. If you work for Shell and you're behind a corporate firewall, how are they going to tap you? There's no way they're going to have a personal tap for someone working within a company doing something. So the legal part, the legal specification, is in a document called Functional Specification. There it tells you what the law requires you to tap specifically, which is, of course, the activity of the suspect. Location information, where is this user, where did he dial in, what's his telephone number, what area is he in, what GSM cell is he at, what provider is he using, all the standard data you can have, and, of course, the content. More legal requirements. Since this law was made about 5 years ago, you can imagine that they put in all these things and hope that it would fix themselves. One of them is that all telecommunication systems that you deploy must have an interception capability. Well, there are none now in use whatsoever. So all the telecommunications equipment in use currently in the Netherlands does not comply. Some other things are fairly obvious legal requirements. When you receive the warrant, you have to start right away. You have to send someone to whatever location you have and start to tap. You can't say, like, come back next week. You're not allowed to buffer any information. They really don't want the provider to see any of the user data, so there's absolutely no buffering of the user data. There's some extra buffering we'll see later on that's data that's important enough for them to keep, even if it means that you might see it. Ensure the target cannot detect the interceptions, which is very important. We'll come back to that as well, because that might be more difficult than the government thinks. Minimize people involved, that's obvious. Protect against tampering, so we do some digitally signing. Protect against eavesdropping, so the encryption. And hand over the data in a specification that the government can really just grasp and process and automate and ask more taps. So they split up these legal requirements in two. One of them is the IP tab, which they've defined as, they thought they defined it as all IP traffic. Obviously, there are some things missing there. There's no IPsec. You can make your own protocol type, whatever, 99, and you don't need to tap it. That will probably be fixed at some point. It will just say everything IP. Then there's the email interception, which they've defined really nice. Think of this tapping equipment as a packet-based interception unit. Now, email is not packet-based. Email is an application. By the time you actually see part of the email address, you've already missed the start of the email. Imagine you're mailed as the 50th person in an email. Then that's definitely not, your name is not going to be in the first packet of the email. So what do? You intercept all your email until you know that your target is not in there? And do you keep these packets? No, you're not allowed to store packets or buffer them. So you're not allowed to look into the connection, but you have to know when the target's in there. The government knows this is a problem. They've been asked questions about it, and they haven't answered. They know it's a problem. They haven't done anything about it. And in their needs to tap more and more and more weird things, ICQ apparently got their attention because everyone's using it to send lots of personal stuff over in a peer-to-peer way. So they said, well, maybe in the future we'll ask for a specific ICQ tap because maybe they're not doing it by email anymore and the ICQ is more interesting. Of course, ICQ is still a proprietary protocol, so I'm not sure how an ISP is allowed to sniff or make something that matches the ICQ protocol. It's also illegal to reverse engineer, yes. Okay, then we get to the real technical part. How, if you intercept some packets, what do you do with it? How do you get them safely to the government? Okay, the tap is split into three parts. They're called handover interfaces. It's where data passes from one point to the other. The first is the legal part. Again, there should be a judge somewhere signing your warrant, telling who to tap. The second part is the data about the user. When does he log in? When does he log out? When does he fetch his email? Where is he? Is his phone on? And the third one is the content of the actual user. What's not defined is if a user's not online and his previous activity generated traffic, how do we need to send this? Like if you have a homepage on a shared server, let's say you have a homepage on Access for All, you're not online, so there's no tap on you running, and someone's accessing your pages and retrieving information. It's not an IP tap, because if you start sniffing the ISP's web server of all their users, you're getting more than that than just the user traffic. Usually, when you see problems like this, the specification says we will negotiate this with you from a case-to-case basis when we need to. Basically saying, well, you're going to give us the information one way or the other. Traffic on a shared server is difficult as well. If you're on a shell server and you're generating traffic while you're not logged on, your process is running, doing stuff, it's difficult to put it back to a user. Okay, so this is the handover interface one in a little bit more detail. I've just listed a part of the XML code that is the warrant. The warrant is fully in XML. It's I know you're laughing, but really it's not designed for automation. You're lying. This is purely for aesthetic purposes. The government has promised not to automate everything. as you can see, this is meant for automation. You can see that the government does not want the ISP to know anything, and they would prefer to just put a box there and have everything done automatically. So what happens is that the XML code defines who agreed to the tap, which judge signed the tap. It's currently done only on CD-ROM, but since it's the XML, you can expect that this will be shipped over the internet at some point. Yes?
A brief question. Who generates the XML?
What do you mean it generates?
This XML code, when the warrant is delivered, is it generated by the judge? Is it generated by the police? Who generates it?
Good question. Yeah, it's digitally signed with the 509 certificate. I'm wrong. No, it's not signed. Some parts of the warrant are signed, but the entire warrant itself doesn't contain any digital signature. So you'll find the key. You can see it at the first one. Secure medium. So they assume that the government knows how to make a warrant, and they ship it to you securely, which in this case means CD-ROM. So you can change it, so the keys won't change, so it's trusted to be the government. But it's a good question. Yeah, I guess it should come through the court and then through the what's in Dutch called the Officier van Justitie, the DA. Okay. So it comes with the keys. To encrypt all the user data. It comes with certificates proving that the list of IP numbers of machines that you're receiving in this warrant are actually government machines. There's been some talk about DigiNotar being used as the certificate agency for to verify all the judges. I haven't seen any of that. And communication used is IPsec and or TSL, SSL, TLS. But we'll come back to that later. The difficult part is the identity of the user. They sometimes don't know who exactly the user is. Sometimes they might tell you, like, okay, it's Paul Wouters, tap him, and you can find out. Sometimes they only know an email address or an email alias or, user ID, address, phone line used. Or worst case, they can even give you a list of IP numbers and timestamps, and you have to figure out who this person is. So handover interface 2, that's the second part. This is where this is the most important data, really. This is the metadata of the user. All the user activity. When does he log in? When does he log out? Did he fail to log in? Did he fetch his email? Did he check his webmail? All the information that generates logs and warnings about the user behavior, but it's not initiated, not done by the user itself. I try to somewhat make this into one struct so you can sort of see what's in there. If you're really interested in all of these structures, there are a lot more that you can see it on the web page. And it's the same for HI interface 3. The only difference is here that we're actually encapsulating the user-generated IP packet instead of the data from the ISP servers. And there's a hash as well. I'm not sure why the government wants a hash, but every 64 packets or 300 seconds, you need to send them a "Hey, we're still here," and give them a checksum. But since everything is going over secure encrypted channels with no packet loss, because TCP renegotiates the link itself, it shouldn't be needed. Maybe they need it themselves internally for processing. This is some of the payload IDs from the previous page where you can see, okay, this is an IPv4 packet encapsulation, or IPv6. Here we see the email packet again. Of course, they know there's a problem with email. We don't know what an email packet is, or maybe we missed the first one. This is the only reference to email in the entire specification. You can also see some fake and generated traffic, which is another interesting thing. To make traffic analysis more difficult, you're allowed to generate fake traffic. You can actually receive the null packet, which is fake traffic from the other side, and you can send fake traffic, which is the fake generated packet. However, when the user logs off, you have to immediately tear down all your encrypted channels to the government. So there's not much point in some of the traffic analysis hiding. So for the people still with me, this is a graph which roughly shows what's going on. The user dials into his ISP or has an ISP connection and uses it on the internet. It generates some metadata from the ISP, which somehow needs to get this information onto an S2 box. An S2 box is the relaying box at the ISP. Imagine you have one S2 box and a couple of S1 snooping boxes across the country. All these S1 boxes, all the sniffers send the traffic into the S2 box, and the S2 box is the only one who knows which government boxes are where to send it to. S1 only talks to S2, nothing else. It might make sense, for instance, for an ISP to implement this metadata part by making S2 a syslog host and just receive all syslogs and just scan through the relevant parts. And if you find a relevant part of the user or one of the users you're watching, you just send it on. So S1, S2 does not need to be encrypted unless it's not secure. The ISP should be able to trust its own network, but it won't do any harm to make a VPN out of that connection. From S2, the warrant can give you a list of up to 5 T1s. T1s are the government receiving machines. Once you receive a packet that needs to go to the government, you have to randomly pick one of the available addresses and send the packet to it. This is, again, to make traffic analysis a bit more difficult. A nice detail is that currently the government has one T1 box, apparently. From behind T1, there are some internal things. T2 are processing machines, the government could use it to actually send the data to multiple law enforcement agencies, though you can also receive multiple warrants for the same user for different law agencies. But I would imagine that the ISP will only get one, and then the government will relay the data through various T2s. That way the ISP has the least information. Okay, so now we know all this implementation of the government, and we pretend to be the bad guys. You see a picture here of the one of the Amsterdam Internet Exchange foundries, one of their big switches. We went on a little field trip to see if we could find this tapping connection point of the government. Because, of course, you need such a huge amount of data to send to the government. It's not going to be easy to hide. And there aren't that many people who have really big internet connections. So we found it for a while, physical location at the NICHEF in Watergraafsmeer, where a lot of the Dutch internet world lives. We located it down to the port, and unfortunately when we took the picture of the port and got home, the port we were looking for was empty. So we weren't exactly right on the physical port location. And by now it probably moved into the Telecity area, which is a lot more secure than NICHEF to begin with. So what else did we gather? Okay, we found, they had a Cisco router, we found their MAC address, we found their IP address, we found their loopback interface address, we found their RIPE number, we found out that they have a /24, we found out that they want another /24 in the next year, which means that apparently they're going to have, more than 512 boxes on the net. It's difficult to, of course, to see the traffic that goes to the government, since the Amsterdam Internet Exchange is a very good switch network. However, if you're sniffing on that network, you can see the broadcasts. So you can see at least the broadcast for, hey, I'm looking for the switch of the digital tapping room. Does anyone have the answer? You will never see the answer because that's not broadcasted. But you can see the broadcast request. So, somewhere mid 2001, we looked on a network and we found peering sessions with InTouch, Planet Internet, Surfnet. Surfnet, by the way, who is a university network, which shouldn't need to be tappable. So why do they have a connection with the government? We see WireHub, Daemon, Euronet. So all the big guys are there. Okay, so traffic analysis. Can we do any traffic analysis? Let's see. This is the monthly graph of the Amsterdam Internet Exchange government port. I see some people have attended hell. Hacking at Large was held in the mid of August, and it's the only traffic we see generated whatsoever. If we take a closer look at the graph, We see background noise. We really don't see anything happening except that one little peak there. So we guess they did some field testing there. Of course, HAL itself was a totally switched network. So it makes you wonder what caused a sustained 3-day peak at 300K or 350K, which means that they probably peaked at least a megabit. We didn't broadcast a megabit, so I'm not sure what they were sniffing. Maybe they were sniffing themselves and see if their stuff worked. Okay, so we're back to evil guys. What do we, if we want to avoid being tapped by the government, what can we do? First of all, of course, don't use telecommunications device, but that's going to be more difficult with the integration of chips and everything. So forget about that. You can do interpop communication. Of course, you've seen the sniffer setup. That only works if the ISP can actually sniff the traffic that you're generating. But if you and your communication partner are within the same hardware box, then the government cannot see that. So if you're dialing into the same ISDN router, if you're on the same cable head end, or the same cable neighborhood, then the traffic never reaches the ISP backbone. So where are they going to sniff it? So unless Siemens gets really active and makes some new hardware modules or software modules for their current equipment, there's no way they're going to be able to sniff this. It's a known problem, and again, the law states you have to do it, and if you don't do it, it's your problem, and that's basically the government's answer. Well, implementation detail, you fix it. Other things you can do, peer-to-peer encryption, you can use IPsec, PP2P, whatever. You can encrypt your application, PGP, SSL, secure web service. You can use steganographics, you one-time pads to make sure that you use keywords that no one knows. You can use videotapes and get them broadcast on CNN, whatever is in your reach. You can communicate when a tapping system is down. This does happen. The specification states this will never happen. It's in the spec. The system will never be down. Four months ago, the MSAM Internet Exchange was in its entirely was down for, I think, over 6 hours. Well, of course, you might have trouble communicating yourself when such a large peering point is down, but at least they can sniff you. You can try to overload. Since there's a lot of encryption going on between S1 and T2, S1 needs to encrypt the packet, needs to set up a VPN tunnel to S2. S2 needs to set up a VPN tunnel to T1. There's all this crypto stuff going on. If you send tiny amount of packets, then you'll also get these 64 packet hashes. These machines will just burn CPU like mad. Or you can just send junk. And they're just going to, if you use even a big MTU, they're going to just have to encrypt everything and everything for you. And they're just not going to be able to handle it. So, current situation. Too expensive for most companies to implement. The government doesn't pay. They say it's a problem of the telecommunication industry. Interestingly enough, in England, the ISPs or some ISPs sued the government over this and said, well, we shouldn't need to pay for this. And they won, and now they get some kind of money. They don't get everything back, but they get some money from the government per tap. In the Netherlands, you get back your variable cost. It means that you won't get anything for making the infrastructure, so you have to buy or lease all this equipment yourself and pay for it. However, if you need to wake up one of your POP managers or technicians to drive to the other side of the country to enable this, you can pay him 250 guilders an hour and get that back from the government. And in fact, some ISPs tried to move as much as they could into these variable costs to decrease the cost of tapping. The specification is sort of secret. The spec was written with openness in mind, using open standards, publicly available stuff. So the setup was very nice from a technical point of view, but the Ministry of Justice and the Internal Security Police got a bit jumpy and said, well, can we make this secret? We don't like hackers to know all this information. So they coupled this with the telecommunications registration, just like every, I think every European country and maybe most countries in the world require telecommunication companies to register at the government. This will cost some amount of money. In the Netherlands, it's the minimum of 6,000 guilders to register. You needed to show your registration number. If you didn't have your number, you couldn't get the specification. Now we get to an interesting part where, of course, all the web hosters that do not have a telecommunication registration need to be tappable. Actually, companies like Rype, who are offering a telecommunication service like the Whois database, need to be tappable. So they suddenly need to register as a telco, or they cannot see the specification. It's still out in the open. I found the spec published anonymously in a few news groups. I published it, and it's now widely known. So far, that some of the ISP organizations are now publishing the spec themselves as well. But officially, it's still a secret. It's a freely distributable secret. There's some technical problems. I've discussed some of them. They're there. They're known. They're not going to be fixed for a while. There was no public debate about the legal or technical parts. It's all closed door sessions, which some of the things leaked out became public. I tried to do some publishing myself. It helps a bit. For instance, at first the law stated that you needed to have a minimum of 5% ready capacity for tapping, which meant that every ISP was violating the law because they didn't have this in place. So when this was published, they changed the law. They made an addendum in September which stated you need to have enough capacity, which means that if you don't get a tap, you have enough capacity, so you're not violating the law anymore. No one is ready yet. The government has one box. As you can see from the traffic stats, there's really nothing happening. Most of the machines from the vendors of vaporware are Carnivore boxes, which need new modules. Comfort Infosys had a box ready, but hardly anyone trusts that company anymore. There are always rumors that there are Israeli backdoors in there. No one is ready. One of the biggest ISPs in the Netherlands canceled their project 3 months ago to make their own tapping box, basically because they didn't pay money. And when he said, well, but we need this, well, it's not generating money, so we're canceling the project. But what if we receive a tap? Well, then we're, well, whatever. we'll see it when it happens. So the law's fully in effect. No exceptions for anyone, so we're all violating the law. If you're hosting anything, offering a public service, you're violating the law. So since this specification was secret, I contacted Ian Goldberg and his provost and let them have a brief look at the specification. Even with just briefly looking at it, because they're both very busy, these flaws already surfaced. And this is in the specification. This is not in the implementation. I'm sure there are many problems in the implementation of crypto as well. So we see insecure use of NTP, MD5 hashes, which likely don't have enough entropy, 64 bits of crypto discarded, too much pseudo-randomness that's needed. You won't be able to generate it. Ian was very set on the digital signature part. That's probably the weakest link in this entire chain. Who am I to tell that some signature is really from a government? The government is big. Who do I talk to? And Niels pointed out to me that both IPsec and SSL need to have a lot of filling packets. You need to have packets of a certain size. If you only have enough data to fill half a packet, you still need to hide the fact that you only have that much data. So you generate some randomness, some random filling that should be indistinguishable from crypted data. Now, if you have this tapping box, you made it, and no one has the source code, you can actually put something else in there. Like, you don't put in random filling, but you put in somehow a nice way of putting the key of that connection in the randomness. So if you're Israel, then suddenly Israel can, the Israeli government will tell whatever Converse Infosys to implement this, and then if an ISP in the Netherlands buys this box, then the Israeli government can happily look along with the Dutch government. This is not a very nice prospect. Okay, I talked about some of this already. The you must have enough capacity is a bad thing. The Netherlands really rushed all of this. All of the specs are in English because it's meant as a European draft, an ETSI draft. Unfortunately, September 11 rushed all the other European countries into passing all kinds of similar laws. The Netherlands was the only country that already passed all the necessary laws for this. Since September 11, as far as I know, nothing has changed in a legal sense in the Netherlands, which in a way is sad. But we want to prevent vendors from competing with features. It's very important that we only do what is needed by law and not start to compete on features. Like, look, you can see this user email, and you can do some investigation yourself. Or I noticed at the vendor day where all these security vendors were showing their vaporware. Or their carnivore boxes, that's really what they want to show. Like, look, it's such a nice user interface. Look, you can see all the user packets. Well, we don't want competition there. We just want a basic implementation that's necessary to apprehend criminals, and we don't want massive amount of tapping for everyone and everywhere, for governments and companies. So what we see is more and more catch-all clauses and acceptable use policies. For whatever reason, if we don't like you, we can kick you away type thing. That's really not acceptable. I don't see it changing, because all these ISPs have to put these clauses into their contracts, because their upstream have the same clause into their contract. And in the end, your upstream is in the US, and they definitely have this in their contract. So if you might be a problem, if you're a known staatsgevaarlijke anarchist, then soon you might have a problem finding an ISP. And of course, since we signed the cybercrime treaty, we might actually be need to tap things that aren't even a criminal offense in our own country. So all in all, freedom of speech is in great danger. So what I hope to do with a few people is to make OpenTap. OpenTap is going to be a minimal implementation of the spec as published by the government, to make sure that every ISP can get it for free, can tweak it the way they want, to make sure that the money and the technical implementation issues, the technical issues, and money is not an issue for these providers to comply to law. Yes, we know enough people in the crypto world and in the technological world to help us, and we're currently talking with some people who are willing to fund this project. So hopefully soon we'll be able to give you a GPL implementation of this, and hopefully all the ISPs will use it, and all the American and Israeli and French governments and companies will install their tapping boxes elsewhere, but not in our country. Okay, so are there any questions? Yes.
One question regarding OpenTap. Given that apparently the capacity and capabilities to perform the tapping do not exist, and based on what I've been hearing earlier in the presentation, we don't actually know a way to make them exist. Wouldn't OpenTap just play in the hands of the tappers, and we're just waiting until the whole thing falls apart to tap to be the better strategy?
Well, I don't think we're in a position not to do anything anymore. the government now has to deal with all the individual ISPs all having their own structure of tapping, of doing things. They want to have their system in place. And they're going to do it. And if you're not going to comply to law, then at some point they will just kick you out. And I think it's more important to comply to take the technical part out of the discussion and make sure that everyone complies on a technical level, and then have the proper people fight the legal battle on fixing the laws. I don't think the technology should become part of the legal struggle of we don't want to tap this much.
Yeah, so you say if you decide to tap, then do it right. And so you want to provide them with technology that works and that only those can tap who are allowed to tap and so on. But you could also... the different viewpoint would be let them do all the mistakes they can do, and let's hope that they do a lot of mistakes so that it becomes obvious that it doesn't work properly, and that enough people get afraid of that so that the system crashes. Different strategies to overcome.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, because there are now very crappy vendor products available that cost too much. But these vendors will want to have their investment back as well. They put some time and money into developing this product. They will sell it. The price will either go down a bit, or some ISPs will try to collaborate and do a leasing construction of boxes that they've been trying to do for half a year now. At some point, when a few of them have implemented this system, the government can point to them and say, well, if your competitor can do it, then so can you. So there's no excuse for you not to implement this. So your civil disobedience will only work if all the ISPs do it. But as soon as one or two actually implement the system, you're going to be out. You're going to be violating the law. And as soon as you get a tap, you're going to have a huge problem. So I don't think that's the proper way of fighting this.
I'm aware of some moves by internet service providers in Britain to try and develop standards which sound very similar, based on XML for the authorization, perhaps using digital signatures. And there does seem to me to be a dilemma about trying to separate the technical and the legal issues, in that if you have a technical specification, it's obviously a good thing that it be published. It should be the result of a transparent peer review process, and you should try and get the bugs out in some sense. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, as soon as you have a technical standard in this way, you can automate it. You can then do interception on a much larger range of targets in a much more streamlined way than would be possible if you didn't have standards and you kept the whole system paper-driven. But on the other hand, if you stick with a paper-driven system, then there may come a time when law enforcement or the government just gets fed up and starts to impose its own solution. So I think there is a dilemma here. It's not clear to me which is the best solution, but I think one has to acknowledge there is a danger in agreeing standards in this way, because if they work and work too well, I think it's the case already that, for example, the Dutch government does 10 times as much telephone tapping as the British government, and one is perhaps opening the door for much greater scale of internet interception than would be the case otherwise.
Okay. Well, again, I think that we no longer have a choice in ignoring all these demands. This has been on the table for 5 years. It's way too late to now say, well, we have second thoughts about this technical implementation stuff. Let's not do it. It should have been fought a bit better 5 years ago. But maybe, I came into this quite late. I came into all this tapping thing only in January, when I found out that officially I was a criminal organization. And I was amazed at how things were. I became a member of the National Tapping group, which was a sort of group of ISPs who tried to show the government some of the wrong decisions they made. And basically this group came with 50 questions. Half of the questions were of such a low technical level that you start to wonder about the ISPs involved. The other half of the questions were very valid questions, and the government just had, they basically had two answers. That there was Either the answer was bilateral agreement, which means we say what you must do later. Or they say, like, implementation issue, as in, well, it's not our problem. This has been going on since January until now, and I think it's been really badly handled. But like I said, I only came in January, and not so much 5 years ago, when people should have fought this much better on the legal on the legal side.
Okay, GPL seems magic for everything, but I think it's one of the areas that maybe it's not appropriate. I can understand that you want to create a product that does the bare minimum specification that a government needs, and therefore you need to control as much as possible this product so that no ISPs then take the core that you've created and add the fancy features such as automatically taking the XML through encrypted links and providing the stuff automatically. So why GPL?
Well, first, GPL versus BSD is I'm always personal for the GPL part. Second, if the government really wants me to write their software, they're either going to pay for it or everyone's going to have it. I really don't like the government using all this stuff based on a BSD license, or actually Israeli vendors grabbing this code and making their own proprietary product and still adding all their vendor extensions and nice interfaces and other things they think that they can compete with. I think the important thing really here is that this code is and should be open to everyone, and it shouldn't be turned into another proprietary solution. This is not about competition. BSD is nice if you want to stimulate competition and give everyone the code to do whatever they want with it. But I'm not in it for the competition. I'm in it here to make sure that the costs of tapping does not become a problem for the ISPs. So does that sort of answer the question?
I like the idea of escalating the problem. Do you have any response from your government to your work?
No. I have some responses from the ISPs that were involved in talk in the politics, and later on in the financial part where they tried to make lease constructions. Basically, I was so shocked and annoyed at the incredible mess I found, where the ISPs first had political goals, which later turned into, well, since we lost all political goals, let us at least make sure that we can bring the cost down. That I basically just published everything I had on a website, and so I was kicked out of the collaboration of ISPs because of that. Then again, 3 months after that, they did publish everything themselves, so I do think it was useful. As soon as we get funding, as soon as the funding is done, yes, we're going to talk to the government about some of the things, especially the practical purposes. There's always this certification system hanging in the air, and I have to make sure that they're not going to deny the system based on just asking 100,000 guilders to certify the product for government use. So there's going to be a lot of problems in the way ahead that need to be talked about. The government's been fairly quiet, except as we could see at HAL. But they're not talking to me directly yet. Okay, I think that's it then. Thanks.